Yo.
8 o'clock Sunday morning. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, flagship station of the 2018 Western Conference champion Vegas Golden Knights. We are streaming live on the LV Sports Network, and if you're listening for the first time, this is Out of Line, and we're right here every Sunday morning at 8, coming to you live from the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studios in Las Vegas. I'm Brian Feldman, and today I'm joined in studio by my friend, former quarterback, and current UNLV color commentator on ESPN Radio here in Las Vegas, Caleb Herring, and a guy who's almost always here, directly in front of me on your radio dial, Chris Magnum Chapman, producer, Lotus Broadcasting sports personality, and Vegas Golden Knights radio locker room correspondent. You can follow the show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM. And like the show on Facebook, that's Out of Line, OUTTALINE. And if you are brave and want to see what we look like, as I mentioned earlier, and I mention every week, you can check us out on Facebook Live right now. My page, Brian Feldman, Chris Chapman, Caleb Herring again in here right now, and I forgot to tweet this morning, so that's my fault. I wasn't a good tweeter. I had a Christmas party last night. But listen, right now, we're here until 9 o'clock, and this is an interactive show, or at least it's supposed to be so. If you do have something to bring, the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Second free throw is good. Rebels are down 3, 13 seconds to go. They need a 3. Hardy into the front court. Hardy left side. Hardy steps back. Jumps into the man and then throws it away.
That's why you have to move
through it right to Feliz, and that'll do the game.
Yeah, What's on Tap is sponsored by the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com. On Tap, as you just heard, the Running Rebels, a very close loss and a hell of a comeback versus Illinois on the road yesterday. We'll talk about that. Nightcap features a one-on-one with Wild Bill Carlson, the first VGK to 100 points. He did that against the Blackhawks last Thursday night. I was there. It was cool. Talked to William Carlson. Also, Emily Van Buskirk is blazing. She's in New York City, and after the Heisman Trophy presentation, she'll be here telling us what's going on. She tried to predict it the other night on a different show that I was on with Caleb, but Caleb stole her thunder. So she went with the guy who finished in third place and let Caleb win. She knew he was going to, and she let me make a fool of myself by saying Tua was going to win. We'll talk to her about that. We'll also talk about the FBS playoff matchups. I think they are exactly what we expected they would be. And it is week 14 in the National Football League. We'll break it down and hopefully recover from the first time ever no one on the show had a winner 2 weeks in a row. I mean, that's unbelievable. I don't know what's happened to Caleb Herring. He has completely fallen off the chart, losing a couple in a row. And it happened for the second time last Sunday, as you will see, and we'll talk about it. Listen, What's on Tap does come your way thanks to our title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Again, check out cardinalfinancial.com. And Cardinal Financial had a hell of a Christmas party last night. That's why I'm rough.
I can see.
I'm rough.
Usually the miserable look on your face after a great party is kind of telling of how great the party was.
I'm glad
you had a great time last night.
It was great. I mean, I danced. I drank.
Did you dance?
It was scary. Lucky it was up in the Lux at the M, way upstairs where nobody could see me unless you.
Was it dark inside?
It was dark. I kept trying to dance in a corner over by the bar to use the bar as an excuse for my poor performance on the dance floor. So let's start this off right now today, and I want to talk. We start off with a highlight in UNLV basketball, and you know I have been one of the most critical guys out here about second halves and how important coaching at halftime is and in-game adjustments. And UNLV has had issues in that in both their major sports, football and men's basketball. And the last two games, even though they have both been losses by UNLV, Valpo, this game, Illinois, man, they came back from a 13-point deficit in the second half. And if Amari Hardy maybe shoots the ball as opposed to try to pass it off, granted, he was blanketed, but you still got to dish out. You still got to throw the rock at the hole with 2 seconds to go and you're down three. You might get a foul called on you.
Yeah, you may. You might. I mean, it's one of the situations where you may want to have something drawn up, too. It didn't seem like a very cohesive attempt to get a three-point attempt because you needed a three. There was
it looked like a UNLV play.
I didn't want to be the one to say it, but it just didn't look organized. I think, like you said, halftime adjustments are one thing where I think they went into half actually down six and came out a little flat and then, you know, kind of let the game get away from them for a little bit. But it's one of the things at halftime on in any sport, a lot of coaches sometimes, and this is just like a coaching style thing, a lot of coaches sometimes use halftime to try to kind of rally the troops and kind of inspire people to continue the effort of the first half or make corrections and go. But the best halftime locker rooms are the ones where you come in and you sit down and there's a plan for what's going to happen in the second half. And there's no rah-rah. There's no need for an inspirational speech. It's just, okay, this is what was working. This is what wasn't working. A lot of times what it is, coaches are prideful people too. And their game plan going into a game, they feel good about. And they think, oh, if we don't make this mistake here, the game plan works. The plan works. And they don't want to make the adjustments.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Type of thing. And then so that's what a lot of people get caught up in. Sometimes, though, coming out of that, you do need to change the game plan up. A lot of coaches, the great coaches have that second game plan that they can, if first half doesn't go the way they thought, they can make the adjustment and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. Based on what we saw in the first half, this is how we're going to attack it. Or they're showing us a zone, this is how we're going to attack the zone now. Or they're press man, this is how we're going to attack that press. Or, you know, we're going to stop shooting so many threes and go to the basket for the second half. So that's the type of thing that should be talked about at halftime. But oftentimes in halftime, you start talking about getting a rah-rah inspirational. Well, we got it. We the stuff's working. We just got to keep finishing and execute, da-da-da-da. And you point to stats. They're like, look, we missed free throws. Just make your free throws. Like, well, there also can be game plan adjustments that need to be made at halftime. So, but like you said, the comeback effort, though, was great. I think, you know, people can say, you know, no moral victories, of course, but you can say, well, that's a good team that was able to come back. That team, whatever that team was, whoever they were, whyever they're playing that way, that's a good basketball team. Why can't they be that all the time, though, is the question. So,
Can we bring up the fact that, once again, I think this is now the third time that we've seen this, where UNLV has had the ball, the final chance to either tie or win the game, and Marvin Menzies has not called a timeout?
It's you know what? It's crazy because that kind of is the way you would do it if you have, like, the Warriors do it all the time in game-winning situations. But that's the Warriors.
Well, that's
like,
I was just going to say, you did not just use UNLV and the Warriors.
They trust the players to make that play. I don't think at this point you should, as Coach Mendy, should have the confidence that his players know what to do and are going to get it. And that kind of takes the onus off of him, and maybe intentionally or not, but you call a timeout and talk to the players and get the players where you want them to be, get who you want on the floor in the game in that situation, because clearly they look discombobulated in those situations. So you should just call a timeout. Hey, get the game plan together. And like I said, it takes the onus off of him. And then at the end of the day, you could say, oh, well, the players didn't execute down the stretch. Or,
well, yeah,
or whatever.
We drew it up and it just didn't work.
Right.
But just expecting guys to go out there, especially young guys, to go out there and kind of know what to do. Because I know what happened at least twice last year where they had the ball in the final seconds, either win or tie the game.
And they were lost.
And they lost all these games. They're not winning these games without the timeout.
But they were lost.
Yeah.
They looked lost on the floor at crunch time. UNLV has a tendency to look lost in the crunch time of games. I am sorry, that is 100% coaching. And what Caleb said right here, a word that I am very reluctant to use when I describe UNLV football or basketball in any way, shape, or form over the past few years, the word great. You said they played great, you know, great comeback. I would say in UNLV terms, it was a great comeback.
Well, I mean, that's where we're talking from, right?
Right. Like,
I mean,
of course. You know, of course. And I'm, you know, I'm giving
you
crap.
I hear you.
But I'm just saying that, you know, we don't see that a lot, so I will give them credit and throw that term out there when they make a 14-point comeback in the second half. You don't usually see it because typically my feeling has been at halftime, Marvin Menzies comes in, great job, let's do it again in the second half, goes and has a quick sandwich, and then they go out on the floor and they play. That's what I thought was happening. But the last two games against Cincinnati and against Illinois, they played good second half basketball. Now, you shouldn't get yourself in that big of a hole. And Illinois, I mean, the bottom line, the team's 3-7. I expected them to be a lot better. They had returning players from last year. They are not. Let's be real, Mags. You do the pregame shows for UNLV football. You are very involved. You're an alumni. Tell me something, my friend. I mean, this UNLV basketball team is not that good, and no matter what their comeback against Illinois, Illinois would probably finish third or fourth in the Mountain West, right? After what you saw yesterday?
Yeah, probably. Okay. Look, I mean,
not that great of a team.
Cincinnati probably not going to win the Mountain West either.
Third in the Mountain West,
maybe
third.
You know, I think they would split with San Diego State, home and away. I think they would. Well, Boise's down, but I think they'd split with Fresno, home and away.
Yep.
I think they would definitely lose to the truck stop up north.
I like it.
I think they'd get swept by that garbage
Magnum
school.
Magnum refused to refer to the Reno in any way.
As he should.
You know
as
what?
He should.
The nicest thing he says is they are the school up north.
They are
and
the
when
school
Mag
north.
Says that, he is being blessed because there's a lot of other superlatives.
The people
he would like
of
to
the
use.
North. The people of the north. If you're a Game of Thrones fan, you get that reference.
I will say this about that school. They refuse. Their ignorant fan base refused to admit that they are UNR, yet every day when I come to work, I drive by a satellite campus that's on Tropicana or off the 215 in between Russell and Tropicana. You know what it says on the side of the building where that satellite campus is? It has their ugly logo, and it says University of Nevada, Reno. Guess what? You are Reno. You will always be second rate. I don't care how good you are at basketball, how good you are at football.
He's going in right now. I love this.
It's a garbage city. It's a joke school.
Two rebel alumni. I'm sitting
listen,
with here.
That school will always be second rate.
This gives me goosebumps. Just listen. I want to go play with the cannon right now.
Okay. Well, here's the bottom line is Caleb brought the cannon back here, but wow is all I can say because as second rate as this school is, there is not one soul in America that knows what they're talking about when it comes to college basketball that would be the least bit surprised right now if you could fast forward to April and Reno was sitting there in the Final Four. There would not be one expert shocked.
Did they end up losing last night?
Right now. You know, I don't know, Mags. I was at a Christmas party. Oh, I didn't get to see everything.
I know they were playing Arizona State and they were getting their ass handed to them.
Okay, but that doesn't matter. It's early in the season. My point is, this team, legitimately, there are three players, maybe four, on this Reno team that will get a look in the NBA, and three of them will probably make rosters in the NBA. That's how, when you have a team in college basketball that has three NBA players on the roster, they can win a national championship. Reno isn't very deep, but they are extremely talented.
They came back and beat Arizona State,
okay,
by the way.
There you go.
They're 8-0 on the season.
Bobby Hurley took a loss. Like I said, I get your guys' point about Reno and second rate because being a Michigan State guy,
you're not
I'm like the guy from Reno because Michigan State going to Michigan State, Michigan. Why did you go to Michigan? You weren't smart enough.
Maybe like
why did you go to Michigan? You know why I didn't go to Michigan? Because we lived about 25 minutes away from Ann Arbor. My parents would have surprised me. At Michigan State, they had to drive an hour and 10 minutes. They would call first. There are reasons I didn't want them walking into my dorm room unannounced.
I like how this guy makes it sound like an hour and a half drive is really difficult.
But your parents are going to call. They're going to call first. 25 minutes, they can just drive, and they'll have something for dinner.
An hour and a half is your work commute in Southern California.
But like I'm saying, your parents are going to call before they drive an hour and a half. They're going to make sure you're going to be there. They don't want to drive. It's a 3-hour commute to not even see you. Okay. In Ann Arbor, they'll drive 25 minutes. That's under an hour
pop-up
commute.
Pop-ups.
That's the bottom line. Plus, I'll tell you right now, MSU had better looking women. So I'm going to leave it at that.
I know you wanted to ask me a question about the basketball program before I went off on a rant about
your
that
soliloquy.
Garbage school.
Yeah, there it is. Your word, soliloquy.
So what were you going to ask me?
Chris, I was asking you, like I said, as an alumni, your feeling about this team. You've seen this go on for years. You've watched this team. You've seen them last year. You've seen them now this year. I mean, is this team a better basketball team? I understand we've seen a couple of decent second halves. I am in fear that we may have something very bad here for this season. I don't know, but yet yesterday surprised me. And Baek Jeong, I've said all year long, I've not stopped saying he is by far the most improved player on this team. He has morphed into a solid D1 player. He had a big double-double yesterday in the loss to Illinois, a big part of the reason they made this comeback. And one other thing I want to ask you again, following it as well as you do, and I know Caleb does as well as he's doing. He's also doing color commentary for the women's basketball team. You'll hear him in January starting to do that. But again, I'm looking at the statistics. Again, I'm seeing three guys in double figures. One of those guys comes off the bench. Mags, Caleb, you guys help me out here again. I asked this question. Marvin Menzies skirted around it by saying that he likes Amari Hardy coming off the bench. But come on, guys. This is the starting point guard. I'm sorry he didn't chuck up the three to try to win the game yesterday. That was a mistake. He admitted to it. He raised his hand and said, man, I should have thrown the ball up. But aside from that, this is the starting point guard and should be. Are you both in agreement with me on that?
That Amari Hardy should be the starting
Absolutely.
Point guard?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. You know, but I just want to say this. I think last year we were sold fool's gold because the team played maybe the worst non-conference schedule of any team in the country. It was by far and away horrific. This year they stepped up a little bit, played a better non-conference schedule, but the team is younger. You know, there's some veteran leadership, but for the most part, you know, Amari Hardy, young guy, only a sophomore. Joel and Tomway. He's a freshman. Trey Woodbury, freshman.
Bryce
Hamilton, freshman. Tervell Beck, sophomore.
To be the best upside on this
team. And Baek Jeong, sophomore. Mm-hmm. JTT, right? Another freshman. So it's a relatively young team that doesn't quite have a star player. You know, last year they had Brandon McCoy. Yeah. Who they could rely on. Look, whether or not Brandon McCoy should have stayed in school is completely irrelevant. The story is the kid was a good enough player to be probably an all-conference player. And
he's actually turned into a decent pro right now, too. I mean,
yeah. So I mean, he had a lot of skill. I mean, yeah. He was a guy who could take the pressure off some of these other guys.
Well, Shakur Justin, his game is completely different because now down low,
him.
Yeah, down low, they can collapse on Justin. Where last year, if you collapse on Justin, you got a 7-foot guy that can just reach up, put the ball in the hole. You had to rotate to him. It's a whole different feel, and it has affected Justin's game. He's quietly still getting numbers, but not like he did last year.
Yeah, well, he was doing it, you know, with a lot of noise last year. This year, he's just quietly doing it. And maybe it's because the team is 4-4.
And you know what I like about the team? I like the fact that they're a young team and there is no real star because I think everybody's going to be back again. Like there's nobody right now on the UNLV roster should be thinking, I can go right now. I can leave. And that's good. I mean, for team building, for program building, that's good. And like you said, they may be underperforming based on our expectations coming into the season, but I think it's good because you don't see it very often where a team kind of builds up together. And that all these young guys right around the same time in their, you know, in their careers, freshmen, sophomores, they're going to develop together. And, I mean, should Hardy be starting? I mean, maybe he should be. Based on the rotation, how are you going to run your lineups and things like that? He could be kind of like the Iguodala factor where he's kind of the steady factor on the second lineup. But either way, the team's going to grow up together. And I think down the road sometime we might be looking at it and say, oh, these guys turned into something special. But
you guys are both making cases.
I'm an optimist.
It's not that I dislike your optimism. I love it. But like what Mag says, by talking about how young these guys are and give them a chance, we're talking like you guys might be making excuses for Menzies to buy another year no matter what he does this year, and I'm going to be completely in disagreement. Like I said, this is never personal, but the bottom line to me is I don't care what happens. I don't care how young they are. I don't care about any of that. To me, it is an NIT berth and possibly an NIT win, or Menzies is gone this year. I'm not pulling any punches. He knows it deep down. Desiree Reed-Francois had to keep Tony Sanchez, and she made it very clear. It is a bowl or bust for that guy next year. Nothing else is going to be accepted. They are expecting 6-6 at the very minimum, and that still might not be enough. Well, he bought a second year, but Menzies,
I'll just say
there
this.
Is no way. Is there any way that an 11-13 win season is going to be acceptable this year?
In theory, no. But I will say this. This is the team he should have had last year with all these freshmen and sophomores.
Okay.
But
fair enough.
That first year, I still give him a pass for that because he, everything that transpired from the courting of Mick Cronin to the hiring of Chris Beard, which, by the way, was a great hire. It was a great hire. The problem was Georgia Tech is stupid, and they hired the coach from Memphis, Pastrnak, who has zero business getting hired. He couldn't even win at Memphis, yet Georgia Tech thought, oh, let's bring him in. Opened up the door for Tubby Smith to leave Texas Tech. And there was no way Chris Beard was not going to Texas Tech. The Regents dragged their feet. They made it look like a joke. Chris Beard wanted none of that, and the opportunity was there for him to leave. Marvin Menzies walked into calling it a dumpster fire is being generous, because what he walked into, no coach should ever walk into. And I will always give him a pass for that because of everything that transpired. The reality is the administration screwed everything up. They had all this time to go out and find a coach, and they still screwed up. They fired Dave Rice midseason, and you could say, people will say, well, yeah, they shouldn't have done that, or yes, they should have. I don't know what was the right answer there, because it was clear that Dave Rice's team was not going to compete in Mountain West that year. They started out 0-3. The team's never improved. I don't know. But the thing is, you got to give him a pass for that first year. And as much as I don't want to see an 11 or 13 win season, and I think that probably would end up costing him his job, there's part of me that says you almost have to give this guy another year because this team is so young. And because he really, this is only his second year. Because you throw out that first year. I don't care what anybody says, okay. You throw it out. That should not count against him.
Can I tell you one thing? Guys, you win some, you lose some. Guys, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times. I mean, like I said, Mags, I think simply Desiree Reed-Francois has got to flex muscle.
Well, there's going to be a lot of pressure on her.
And the bottom line is, I am telling you right now, like I said last year, and Chris, you know I did this, and I'm not doing this in any way, shape, or form to be a braggart, but I said last year, at the beginning of the NBA season, that why do we have discussion next year? It is obvious. We talked about this the other night on a different show. Mm-hmm. LeBron James will be an L.A. Laker. Yeah. Certain things you can see coming. Marvin Menzies does not make the NIT. Write it down. Put it in stone. He will not be the coach of UNLV next year. People have theories on, I've heard a lot of Rick Pitino talk. It's interesting talk. Don't bank on that by any means whatsoever, because UNLV has had a black eye in their basketball program before by one of the, in my opinion, one of the greatest coaches in the history of the game.
Wrongly, they shouldn't have had that.
100% wrongly, Chris, but they have, and you don't want another black eye. Rick Pitino brings, if it's not a black eye, it's a healing green eye. So I don't know. Seriously, it's something you need to think about. But again, that's it. Sanchez will be here next year, 6-6 minimum bowl bid. Menzies is going, he won 20 games last year and wouldn't take a CBA bid.
I'm going to be honest. I've looked at UNLV's football schedule next year. 6-6 is going to be hard.
Brother, 100%. Yeah. I don't think Tony will be here in 2 years. I don't think he will open Raiders Stadium as the UNLV head coach. Listen, we got to take a break. On the other side, we're going to talk. We got the Golden Knights. Everyone's still kind of shaking their heads about yesterday's game at the Staples Center. I just think it was a little bit of a letdown because they had two very emotional comeback victories. We'll talk about that. Evely Van Busker is going to be here in a bit to talk about the Heisman Trophy and also the FBS playoffs, which I'm really actually looking forward to, although I wish Georgia was in it only because I think they're the only team that's proven to this point they could play with Alabama. Don't get sold on Dabo Sweeney and Clemson. They're not going to beat the Tide. And we'll also talk, as we mentioned, NFL Week 14. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. This is Out of Line. Caleb Herring's here. Chris Chapman's here. And yeah, you're stuck with me, too. I'm Brian Feldman. We'll be right back.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
And the Vegas Golden Knights, as we just mentioned, I mean, they've won 9 of their last 12 games. I think they were 8 of their last 9 going into last night at the Staples Center in L.A. And it just wasn't to be. The team definitely looked like they were skating on their heels, for lack of a better term. It just wasn't the Golden Knights that we had been seeing, but you've got to take into account the two emotional wins. The Capitals coming in on Tuesday night, that was such an emotional game. And, you know, a lot of Caps fans here, of course, the first time they reunited at T-Mobile Arena, they lost, you know, in Washington earlier in the season. It was just a huge game. It was so much fun to watch. 5-3, closer than that, an empty netter at the end of the game. But I will tell you right now, they scored two back-to-back goals within 13 seconds in that game, and two within 15 seconds in the Blackhawks game, in, you know, two times in 3 nights to win games. And I just think when they took off and they went to L.A., you know, you're looking at the last-place team, and sometimes you just get a little lackluster. And it really looked like yesterday they were out of sorts. It looked like they were the last place team and the LA Kings were the resurgent team that was having a good game. I think you'll see things differently. They play at 6 o'clock tonight. They're back at T-Mobile Arena before they go on the road for quite an extensive road trip. I think it's 4 or 5 games that they'll be gone after tonight. So if you get a chance, check them out. They're playing the Dallas Stars. And I will almost guarantee you, we talked about it, Mags, but can you not see any scenario where you don't see Malcolm Subban in net tonight?
I think you've got to start Subban. First of all, Fleury's played pretty much every game for 2 weeks. Last time we saw Subban was a Calgary game, which was, I think, 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago tomorrow. I'm trying to remember exactly when it was, but it was a while ago. And back-to-back games, this would be the fourth game this week. There's a couple rest days coming up. Give Fleury the day off. Look, the problem is I think this is almost a must-win game now, because the problem is, as good as the Golden Knights have been, 9 of their last 12, I think it is that they've won.
Mm-hmm.
Calgary's won 5 straight. San Jose's winning games. The Ducks are winning games. Edmonton is winning games now. So everyone else in the division is winning games. So while you've made up that ground, the problem is everyone else is winning. So you're not gaining much at this point on anybody. You have a 3-game road trip coming up to the East Coast, going to my stomping grounds, New York, New Jersey, and then the Islanders again, and then Columbus. So you've got a 4-game road trip next week. So there's another back-to-back in there, too. So I think you've gotta find a spot for Subban. This is a good spot. The question for me is, and I don't know because I haven't seen anything yet, but I wonder if Pierre-Edward Bromar is going to play today, because he hit, I can't remember who it was for the Kings. He was getting off the ice. They made contact, unfortunately, and I think it wasn't intentional, but it was shoulder to the head. And I do think he will be suspended at some point, whether today or...
He's going to be fine. There's no question about it.
Yeah, whether it be today or the first game of the road trip. So that's another question mark. The problem was, and I think there was just an emotional letdown. L.A. clearly wanted to win this game, and they weren't even good. The Golden Knights were just sloppy in a lot of areas.
Lethargic. They just were.
And, you know, you mentioned the two big wins during the week. They beat the Capitals. They get 2 goals in the third period. Nate Schmidt scores the 2 goals, the last 2 goals, the winning goal, and then the empty netter. They beat Chicago, coming from behind again. So there was going to be a letdown. And for the Kings, they scored more goals yesterday than they did the entire playoff series against the Golden Knights last year. So clearly, they had this game circled. They're still not good. But sometimes you just have a letdown, and I think the key is going to be how the Golden Knights respond tonight. The problem is you're not playing a bad team tonight. You're playing the Dallas Stars team that has maybe the best first line in hockey, or if not the best, one of the best. It's going to be a tough game tonight, and I think anyone circling this as a W, they're fooling themselves, because Dallas is a really good team.
Oh, there's no question Dallas is a good team. I think you're going to see them play a lot better. It's almost good, and good is, it's almost a bad play on words, but when you lose a game the way they did, it does get you refocused in a hurry. If that would have been a really tight game where they lose by 1 goal at the end, you could be really mentally exhausted, like, wow, we gave it our all. This is the type of game that I could see them recovering from, and I think you'll see a better game at the T-Mobile Arena.
I can't wait to talk to whoever it is I talked to for the pregame today, because that's one of the things I'm going to talk to them about. Is it almost good that you get this game today coming off of a really bad performance.
I think it is. And wrapping this up, I want to get to an interview because one of the things we did mention, we teased at the top of the show, was William Karlsson. It is a feat. He is the first Golden Knight, and he always will be for the history of the world, to score 100 points. He did it in assist against the Blackhawks on Thursday night. I told Chris in the locker room, Chris is really, you know, I give him a lot of crap, but Chris is fantastic at what he does. He is the locker room correspondent for Vegas Golden Knights Radio. Most of the players really enjoy him. Chris gets right in the scrums, leads most of the interviewing things, and you can see when, like, you walk up to a guy like William Karlsson, they're friends. Karlsson, he doesn't put a smile on his face when everyone walks up to him. Most of the time, it's like, oh, crap, I got to answer these questions. Chris walks up to me, he gets a big damn smile on his face, so I always make sure I weasel in next to Chris so I make him happy too. But we both got a chance to talk to him. I did talk to him after the game, and I did get a chance to ask him about the 100 points. It does mean a lot, and make no mistakes, Wild Bill might not score 43 goals this year, but this is a upper echelon player in the National Hockey League, a guy that has a knack for finding the net, a guy that can make the pass at the perfect time, and a guy that would be on the first line of most hockey teams in the National Hockey League. And this was me talking to Chris. This was Thursday night after they played the Chicago Blackhawks. William, you got 9 of your last 11 games you've won now. Is this team, do you think, turned the corner this year and figured it out and getting the puck in the back of the net?
For sure. We're scoring a lot more, and that's a huge part in winning winning games, right? So I just think we got our groove back, and we're working hard, playing fast, and yeah, just got a groove back, and it's a lot easier to play hockey when it's like that.
The Washington game, you get those two quick goals to turn it around, and it happens again tonight. How crucial is that for your team to do things like that in a game? I mean, like, to not have a letdown tonight.
Yeah, no, I think that's huge to have within the team, to know that doesn't matter if we're down 1 or 2 goals, we can still turn this around, and I think this group is very confident right now, so... It's great to see the morale that we have in the team, and that's what you need to be a winning team.
I know personal accomplishments you talked about a minute ago aren't a big, huge thing, but 100 points, the first guy to do it for the Golden Knights, that's got to be extra special to you.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, who would have thought when the expansion draft happened that I would be the first one, but here I am playing with great line mates in Marshall and Smith to help me a lot to get where I am.
Last year this team did something miraculous. You're not quite the record yet last year, but where do you put this team comparing to last year at this point in the season?
I think we're getting there. We had a tough start, but we've been winning a lot lately, and we're starting to recognize ourselves as a group and why we're winning games. We're getting there. We're getting better and better each game.
William Karlsson, winger extraordinaire, center extraordinaire for the Las Vegas Golden Knights, the first line with Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault. And I enjoyed the hell out of watching them play last year, and I'm doing it again this year. They are a lot of fun. I mean, there's that overused term, poetry in motion. But when those three guys are in sync, which they are more than they are not, it is a lot of fun. Riley Smith, to me, is one of the best distributors of the puck in the National Hockey League. And Jonathan Marchessault and William Karlsson are as good at finding the twine as anybody in there as well. And very impressive. And I love the second line. Gerard Gallant has played with it a lot, especially since Stastny went down. And right now in that second line, at least what we saw against Chicago and Washington, Cody Eakin is who is having a phenomenal year. He's the William Karlsson of this season. And, of course, Alex Tuck, healthy, strong, long, and got some of the strongest, toughest hands in the game when it comes to controlling the puck and taking it through the neutral zone into the opposing player's zone. And of course, a guy that some people had concerns with because he got off to a little bit of slow start, and Max Pacioretty also got hurt. This is a pure goal scorer, a tough guy, and when I think of hockey players, Max Pacioretty is one of the first guys that come to my mind. He is a hockey player, guys. Love this team. Love what's going on forward. Again, they are at T-Mobile tonight against the Dallas Stars before they take to the road. Wednesday, they'll be in New York to play the Islanders. Then New Jersey, they'll play the Devils next Friday. And next Sunday, they'll be on the road to take on the Rangers. A big trip in New York. They're going to be spending a lot of time there. And then they'll be in Columbus to play the Blue Jackets. They finally come home a week from Thursday, right before Christmas, they come home for a little bit of a homestand. They'll be here against the Islanders, and the Montreal Canadiens come to town on the 22nd. So look forward to that, the Vegas Golden Knights. Again, winners of 9 of their last 12 games. Let's throw last night's game out the window and see if this team continues to morph into the team that I think they will be. I think we're looking at a playoff team, and I think we will see this team maybe even make a run in the playoffs again. I keep saying I think they're going to get to the second round. I would love to see to be wrong and have them go farther. This is Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman, joined today by Caleb Herring, who's on your my right on your radio dial. Chris Chapman, let me say that, the Vegas Golden Knights correspondent all over Vegas Golden Knights Radio. He's here producing the show, and we're going to come back. We're going to have Emily Van Buskirk on the other side. We still got some NFL to talk as well. Hey, we're here every Sunday morning. This is the Fox Sports Studio, Cardinal Financial Studio, I should say, here in Las Vegas. We'll be right back.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
Blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. A Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital. We are there every Monday night hosting the best Monday night football party in town. You've got the Vikings at the Seattle Seahawks this week, and that will be Monday night. Come on down, join me. We'll have a good time, and we're giving away replica jerseys. We're giving away wing parties. We're giving away free wings. We're hooking you up. Las Vegas show tickets. Definitely come down there and check that out. Joining me again for Blazing this week, a very good friend of mine. She'll be in town next week for the Mitsubishi Las Vegas Bowl. Emily Van Buskirk, the lead college football and basketball writer at Yard Barker and co-host of national podcast Sideline SAS with Kaylee Krish, and that is with three S's, S-A-S-S. She was with us the other night on a show up the dial that a good friend of mine does, and she joins us here again today. And Emily, you know, you got to be pissed at Caleb Herring, who's also joining us, by the way. He's here, and because you, to be nice, you allowed him to take Kyler Murray, even though you wanted that pick as well, and we completed the gimmick. You took the person who finished in last place in Dwayne Haskins. I took Tua, who lost by like a lot of votes. I mean, it was a runaway for Kyler Murray, much more than I think anybody expected, but wasn't a surprise to you at all, was it?
No, I think at the end of the day, for us in the media and people that spent time around all of the finalists, that Kyler Murray winning was not much of a surprise, but I know across the country when the results were revealed and we got a first look at the breakdown, it was definitely surprising to see Kyler win, you know, so many of those regions. I mean, Tua only won the South, and that was a little surprising. And then there was the breakdown of the percentage of people who turned in, you know, their votes before the SEC championship game, and the majority of people turned them in after. And so then there's the question of how much did that game affect people's Heisman vote?
Well, aside from that, and I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it, it's not a gigantic surprise. I think, and no question, to me, he is as good of an athlete as there was. I don't understand, you know, one of the things, he is so bent and dented on playing Major League Baseball. And how can you blame him? A very high draft pick of the Oakland A's. He is committed. He says he will go to training camp in February. But come on, man. Why not be Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders, even Jim Thorpe? Why not?
I mean, he definitely talked about if it were possible for him to play both sports, that he absolutely would. It's just logistically not an easy thing to do. And he was very coy with us here about his plans. I mean, we all know that he signed the contract and he's with the A's and all that, but we did ask him a question, you know, which would you rather win? This is what we asked him right before the ceremony. We said, would you rather win a Heisman or a World Series? And his answer was Heisman. So, and of course, someone's going to answer that on the spot like that, but it was interesting, and people were trying to read a little more into it. Maybe there's a future in football, but I see him sticking with baseball. I think he's going to be great, and I'm excited to watch.
Well, yeah, of course, he'll be playing up in the Bay Area where you are from and live and dwell, so you get to see the guy eventually because I think he will make it to the top level. I think the goods are all there, and I think that the Heisman Trophy answer, as you well know, M, was politically correct. He was blowing sunshine up our backside because that's what you're going to say when you're about to go into the Heisman Trophy ceremony. Ask him that question at this time next year, and I promise you, what's more important, the Heisman you won last year or winning a World Series? I promise you he will say World Series. And if he doesn't, he will get a talking to by Billy Bean and all the way down the line. So that's just the way that it is. But he did win the Heisman. Let's quickly transition over to the FBS playoffs. I don't think anyone is surprised by what we're going to see. We all knew that it was going to be Alabama, Clemson, and Notre Dame. The question mark would be, did Ohio State do enough at the end of the season to overcome that loss to a 6-6 Purdue team? Obviously not. They wanted to see a more dynamic team. I mean, I don't know. Dwayne Haskins, I think, would have given you a show, but you want to see Kyler Murray and this Oklahoma team in the Big 12 get another chance at winning a national championship. For those of you that believe that's going to happen, I've got some tremendous swampland down in the southern parts of Florida to sell you, because Alabama is going to wipe the floor with Oklahoma, as they will with the winner of the Clemson-Notre Dame game, which will be Clemson, and Alabama will hoist another national championship. Georgia, to me, was the only team that has proven they can play a full game with Alabama. They also proved it in the national championship game last year, and it's a shame. We knew they weren't getting in, but can anybody, and please, no denial. I like Dabo Sweeney. I know he's a hell of a coach in Clemson, but he's playing with a quarterback that was not expected to be his quarterback at the beginning of the year. It's a very young kid that's going to be thrown in the national spotlight, although the Georgia quarterback Fromm did it last year as a freshman. Can anybody, and I'm talking Clemson probably, beat this Alabama team?
I absolutely don't think so. I'm not super impressed by Clemson this year. And that Clemson-Notre Dame game is going to be one of the hardest things to watch, honestly. But I was at the College Football Awards prior to coming to the Heisman, and we did get to go to the College Football Playoff presser, so we were able to interview all four of the coaches. And I thought one thing that was interesting was one writer tried to get Nick Saban to answer the question, do you think the four best teams in college football are here, represented in this playoff? And, of course, he's going to say yes, and he did. He said, what do you want me to say? But he did throw in that he thinks Georgia is one of the best teams. I don't know if that's just because he's an SEC guy or not, but he looked over at Lincoln Riley after he said it and kind of shrugged, which I thought was pretty funny.
Well, I'll ask you, is Georgia the second best team in college football? What do you think?
I think that they might be, given what we've seen.
Yep.
And how well that they played against Alabama. I've seen them play live personally this year. I think they're very good. They're physical and they're athletic, and I love Jake Fromm. So.
Yeah, I did too. It's going to be interesting, you know, with a team like Georgia. They're playing Texas in the Sugar Bowl, and Texas is a very capable football team. If we've seen, even though Oklahoma avenged the loss to Texas, they did beat a good Oklahoma team. And I just wonder if, you know, a team like Georgia, all that time off, they play on New Year's Day, if they're going to be able to recover from the fact that they know they can play Alabama and slip up against Texas. Because if they look past Texas and think you're going to walk in there and beat that team, you might have a whole nother thing coming. It's a pretty good Longhorn team this year, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a Texas team that could definitely sneak one in on you if you're not paying attention, but there's no way that I think Kirby Smart won't be prepared. I mean, they're going to be pissed that they're not, and they only have themselves to blame for that and the way it's set up. So I think they're going to go in and smash Texas, and we'll all be glad for that.
Well, I agree with you there, Em. As we are always here, running late, could talk to you all day about this. The one thing I will say, probably one of the bowl games I'm looking least forward to, other than the Clemson-Notre Dame game, I'm actually looking forward to watching Notre Dame get their ass kicked. So I can't lie about that, but I think the LSU-UCF game is going to be a joke. We all know and feel very bad for that UFC team losing their quarterback that truly was a great collegiate football player. Great. collegiate football player. You cannot lose that and play with a team like LSU. I think the Fiesta Bowl is going to be a joke. I really do. But we'll see what happens. You never know. Emily Van Buskirk, she is the lead college football and basketball writer for Yardbarker. She is the co-host of Sideline Sass with Kaylee Krish, and she will be in town next Friday for the Fiesta Bowl, where our good friend in the Fiesta Bowl is going to say this before the game. We play to win the game, right? We're going to get to hear that next week.
Yeah, I can't wait. I've been, you know, following the Herm Edwards
Love
story
Herm Edwards.
From start to finish. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. Of course, Arizona State in town to play the Mountain West champion Fresno State Bulldogs. Should be a decent game. We're going to let Emily go as we get into our picks. And we will be talking to you very soon on the show, and I look forward to seeing you this weekend.
Sounds good. See you next weekend.
All right. So, guys, we're at the twilight of the show. It is time for Week 14 in the NFL. Everything is shaping up. One of the things that is surprising me, and I think we're going to see it unless the Baltimore Ravens do make a run into the playoffs, that John Harbaugh is going to be fired this year. Man, you want to talk about other teams right now that are looking for a coach that have got to be salivating. This is a Super Bowl champion coach. This is a guy that understands how to coach. The one thing he maybe did too long is he might have ridden the Joe Flacco train a little bit too long. Lost Ray Rice after the last Super Bowl. There are a lot of intangibles that have changed the outlook, but this guy has always been able to put together a great defense, and I'll tell you right now, I would be all over him like a hobo on a ham sandwich if I was the Detroit Lions right now.
I don't think that's going to happen. There's two places.
They just got a guy.
He's not. Yeah. I understand he's that, but I would take him over to their guys.
He's either going to end up with the Jets or he's going to end up with the Browns.
And how happy would you be if he was a Jets head coach?
You know what?
Ecstatic,
I would be ecstatic.
Right?
Yeah.
I know you would be. And I would be
young
too.
Young quarterback, young defense. It'll take him a little bit of time, but you know what? Cleveland's is a good option too because they have a pretty good defense. I think Baker Mayfield's going to – I think I was wrong on him.
It looks rookie like he's
gonna
year.
Yeah, it looks like
well,
he's going to be –
Well, Saquon Barkley's got a shot at that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but I think he's going to be in the discussion.
The Browns are definitely a more desirable destination because of that defense, though.
Yeah,
no question.
I think
oh,
that makes
like,
a big deal.
As a coach,
deal.
That might be the first thing. Like, do they have a defense? Oh, yeah. Let's
Hell
go
yes,
work
they
it
do.
Out.
And you got a quarterback with a lot of moxie
yeah.
and a guy that is not afraid.
And they have a couple good young running backs, too.
100%.
Oh, yeah. They got a little stable. I mean,
100%. The Browns are an up-and-coming team, and I look forward to it. Listen, guys, let's get to our pick segments. As again, last week, 0-5, we had Frank Harnish visiting and Chris Wynn. They both laid an egg. Frank came very close. I think the Raiders were getting 14 points, and they lost by 13 points. But it doesn't matter. We all lost. Me and Chris Wynn both became homers last week and went with the Lions thinking they would cover the spread at home against the Rams.
Oh, God.
They did not. Shocker on that one. So, guys, let's get into this week. There are a lot of things going on, playoff implications, and interesting Monday night game with Minnesota going to Seattle. Probably the team that loses that game will be out of the playoff picture. And I'll tell you what, if Seattle keeps rolling, they're going to be a dangerous team come playoff time because they have a lot of experience. They've got a coach that understands how to win in the postseason. But believe it or not, I'm not picking this game, but I'm going on. The Vikings are going to beat Seattle in Seattle this week. I don't know why, but somehow Kirk Cousins is going to put together a game. Their defense is going to play stellar, and I just think Seattle's in for a letdown. But guys, Chris Chapman, who do you got?
I'm going to go with the Bills against my Jets. They're laying 4. The Jets have quit. Sam Darnold going to get the start, I think, today for the Jets. I don't think it matters. Darren Lee done for the year for the Jets. I just think it's a good spot for the Bills. I can't believe I'm going with the Bills, but I know my Jets, and my Jets are bad.
Chris and Caleb tied at 8-4-1. We gave you a tie the week I didn't get a hold of you.
Yeah.
So I didn't give you a loss.
I'll take that.
Okay, so.
I got to get back to my winning ways, and it's crazy that I'm going to say this, but I'm going out on a limb here because I picked it yesterday, and I'm going to stick with that pick. I'm going with the Raiders.
The Raiders.
To cover against the Steelers. It's a mix of the Steelers just struggling. I think they're hitting another rough patch in the season with Connor being out. So the running game may not be.
You're not thinking about the money line, though, are you?
No.
You're taking all 10 of those points.
I'm taking all 10 of them.
All 10 of them.
And the Rams are going to do this on accident, too.
I like it. I'm going to take all 4.5 points of the Indianapolis Colts. They're going to bounce back from the loss to Jacksonville. And I think they're going to win outright in Texas. We're out. I'm Brian Feldman, out of line next week.